Well, the Environment Committee's recommendation on the government's proposed replacement for the Resource Management Act has drawn strong criticism from Forest and Bird. And joining us to discuss the concerns, May Downing, who is the Acting General Counsel for Forest and Bird. May, thank you for joining us on Radio Wātea. Ko Dale tēnei. Welcome. Tēnā koe.
Morena, Dale.
Thank you, May, for joining us. Now, for those who haven't been following the process closely, what are the key changes being proposed in the Natural Environment Bill and Planning Bill, and why is Forest and Bird so concerned about them, May?
So, at a high level, these two bills would replace the Resource Management Act. And while Forest and Bird supported some aspects of the reforms, we had raised significant concerns about the majority of the package. The big concern is that the bills have come back from the Select Committee in a much weaker form than the public originally saw, especially on environmental safeguards. And basically, that all environmental protections under the current system would be stripped out in these bills.
It appears that it's economic growth at all costs. Many New Zealanders don't want to compromise our natural environments in order for financial prosperity. We see these as the taonga that we are obliged to pass down to future generations. Now, I think we're united, those who have a green bent in environmental priorities, with the thinking of Tau Māori, and our responsibility as kaitiaki to ensure that we do the best we can to gift, if you will, or to pass on Papa Tuanuku in the best shape we can. So we're sort of united here, and Māori, I think, are hugely aggrieved. I know it's a generalisation, I'm not speaking on behalf of any particular organisation, that our rights within the RMA, treaty rights that existed, are being eroded. And I sense the same from people with an environmental attitude of protectionism. Your thoughts, please, May.
100%. I'll preface this with one of the bills, the Natural Environment Bill, is 550 pages. So I'm still working through it. And I haven't yet done a deep dive on the treaty aspects, but what I have scanned is a severe diminishing of iwi participation. And from our experiences when we get involved in planning processes across the country, mana whenua participation is absolutely critical. This, you know, even Forest and Bird, sometimes we're aligned, sometimes we're not when it comes to some projects. But ultimately, when we have this participation, it ensures we get really well informed and enduring outcomes.
One of your main criticisms is the weakening of environmental limits and the increased ministerial discretion to approve activities. What practical difference could these changes make on the ground?
So in a nutshell, it will lead to much more development in the wrong place. Now, Forest and Bird isn't opposed to development, but it really needs to be in the right location. And the other striking problem with this, the processes that these bills would enable, is there's very limited ability for local communities to input. So communities could see new projects from discharges of contaminants into waterways and out to sea to large infrastructure projects in neighbourhoods, without the ability to have a say and without there being robust environmental limits in place.
May Downing is with us, General Counsel for Forest and Bird. May, does it make a mockery sometimes, this sort of steam ahead anyway attitude that we've seen from the Coalition over the last 2.5 years, despite the many people who make submissions go to the trouble of doing so against these changes? It feels at times that no matter what we say in our submission process, the government have their minds made up and tend to steamroll ahead. Does it make something of a mockery of that process, do you think?
I'd agree with that. It's also really exhausting. I mean, we did put in a really comprehensive submission, and so it is sort of quite a slap in the face to have the report back come back even worse.
So you've got 550 pages, longer than most decent novels, And, you know, hard to get your head around. And you're a lawyer, so you're used to reading stuff like this. But for us lay people, I mean, we just wouldn't bother, would we? What could these recommendations mean for local communities? And let's also talk about waterways and biodiversity and the natural environments that, you know, our people of New Zealand value and rely on every day.
Yeah, I might start with, okay, so one of the, this is, I guess, very, could be quite legalistic, but one of the fundamentals that we see that these bills have got wrong are the goals. So these are essentially the overarching purpose of the bills. And the fundamental problem is that they give no clear priority to safeguarding the environment. And what these goals will do is that they'll set the framework for the other documents to follow. So the national direction, and then the national direction will need to be particularised at the regional level. And these are where the minimum standards. So basically, when I talk about limits, I'm talking about acceptable standards for healthy waterways and other ecosystems. And the process that the bills will establish is a very quick and dirty establishment of this national direction. The timeframes for people to submit are really short, and the appeal rights are limited. When I say that, they will be limited to appeals on points of law only. So I guess in a nutshell, what this means for communities is that they'll either be pushed out or have very limited say on activities affecting their local waterways, biodiversity, and these precious parts of the environment.
Yeah, I guess the Environment Court, once a precedent is set, obliged to follow that lead judgment, so the implications can be significant and indeed intergenerational. How difficult is it in a legal sense as well, May, to reverse this? And we're not hearing as yet from opposition parties that would be their intent if this legislation goes through. And how close are we to seeing that occur?
Well, I noticed the Parliamentary Commissioner for the Environment has urged that these bills go back to the Select Committee, and we'd fully endorse that. However, I'm totally alive to our main challenge is that political leaders are trying to get this passed before Parliament closes in, what is it, September, right before the election, and that will make asking for, you know, drastic changes quite difficult. But there are opportunities here. With more work, we could have something more enduring and meaningful, but again, I think it's going to allow for political flip-flopping.
And of course, the aspect of treaty rights, which are intertwined into this legislative change, are yet to be resolved. So we can anticipate litigation for years ahead, could we not? Because if those treaty rights are contravened?
I agree with you, and not just in that space, but all spectrums, all aspects of decision making, if these bills become law.
Tēnā koe, mai. As they move forward to the next stages in Parliament, we've been asked to go back to the submission process. What changes is Forest and Bird calling for? And what are the biggest challenges and opportunities that you see ahead?
Sure. So basically fixing the goals, which I spoke to earlier, just ensuring that they actually do set a clear priority for safeguarding the environment. We also want, so there's a problem with the limit setting under the bills. These can be informed by economic aspirations, and we say when you're setting minimum standards for a healthy environment, economics shouldn't factor into it. These need to be science-based, informed by the physical environment itself and what level the impact the environment can withstand. Economic considerations can come in later, but when you're just trying to see, you know, establish that baseline limit for what biophysical limit for what growth can happen, it's important that science feeds into that. And then it's the big other problem that we want just deleted outright is the regulatory relief framework. So that would require private landowners, if they have the likes of a significant natural area, site of significance to Māori, or outstanding natural landscape on their property, We thought this be deleted as it could disincentivise councils from identifying these areas. Unfortunately, they've survived the select committee process, so we just want that taken out.
Tēnā koe, Forest and Bird have been an organisation advocating for the environment and for our flora, fauna, for over 100 years. And it just seems that there are so many interacting perspectives for the work that May does, and of course, as we too demand an adherence to treaty rights afforded us all those years ago. Nice to meet and talk with you about this, May. Look forward to another conversation too as this matter unfolds, but appreciate you sharing some perspectives on behalf of Forest and Bird. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dale. Thank you.
Thank you. May Downing, legal counsel, lead counsel for Forest and Bird.